Well, hi, everybody. I am here. I'm Marilyn, and I am here with members of the Climate Alliance for the South Sound. This is their second episode, and I'm so glad to have them. They're going to be a regular feature on Radio Tacoma every other week. So listen in if you enjoy the program. And I am speaking with Aoife.
Aoife.
Yeah. Oh, God, me and my vowels. Aoife.
You got it.
Gemini and Cordell. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi.
So we interviewed Aoife and Gemini for our last episode. You may be familiar because you listened to them. And if not, I invite you to go to the archives and listen to our first show. But we have a new person, not new to Cass, but new to the Cass radio show, which is going to now be called...
We haven't decided.
It's going to be called We Haven't Decided Yet.
We're voting this week.
We're voting this week. So that's how new the show is. But I would like to introduce you to another person from Cass, and that is Cordell. Cordell, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, hello. My name is Cordell. He, him. I actually am kind of new to Cass, and so I've only... been about a month since I joined. Let's a bit about myself. Grew up in Washington most of my life. Moved around a bit before coming back to Washington. I lived in Hawaii for about 3 years, and then when I was 18, I decided I'd like to come back home. I have a degree in computer science, bachelor's from UW Tacoma. I don't know. What else is there to say about me? Nothing much, really.
Well, why did you join CASS, Cass?
Oh, okay. I think initially when I first came to the meeting, like the first meeting, a lot of it was just curiosity. I didn't know much about the Mega Warehouse, but it was being built fairly close to where I used to live, and that's still my parents' house. So I was interested in knowing more about it and what else was going on. I stuck around because it turns out they're pretty cool people, and they had a lot of really good reasons for opposing the Mega Warehouse, and I wanted to try and help my city. Like, there's a lot that Tacoma does that I really don't like, and I've been quietly seething about it for a while, but that's not useful to anyone. And I guess no one really cares about your problems unless you're actually doing something about it, so it's better to be doing something.
Yeah, that's an interesting statement. So would you explain to somebody who may not have heard about it, what is this Mega Warehouse thing? And then we'll get back to interviewing you.
Oh, the Mega Warehouse. It's a kind of a giant warehouse that they're building off South Tacoma Way. I think that it's going to be like one of the top 10 biggest warehouses in the country.
What?
Yeah. And they're building it over a Superfund site, which is super contaminated. So... it's too poisonous to build houses or apartments and stuff off of it because you can't live there. But workers don't count as people, I guess. So it's totally okay for them to work at the warehouse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm going to get back to Cass. So, Cordell, what did you like about Cass?
So much. They're like I said, they're pretty cool people. It's very open and welcoming. I just kind of showed up one day and then like, they're like, hey, you're one of us now.
That's right.
And I mean, they're really smart. Like a lot of them know so much about just various local issues. They're very deeply passionate and very deeply knowledgeable. And they're also just really connected to lots of the community, and a lot of them are part of like different groups too. Like some of them are part of the neighborhood councils or, part of local unions. And so it's like being a part of CAS is just like, it's like it opens doors to like the rest of the community kind of a thing. It's just the broader network.
That's a really important statement. Thank you. What are some of the environmental issues that you see in Tacoma besides the Mega Warehouse? And what would you like to see done about them?
Well, I mean, the biggest issue, of course, is always going to be climate change, right? And then all the carbon emissions and so on. And then air pollution is a sort of a corollary to that, right? That you got all the smog and toxic chemicals that come from cars and factories, and we're expected to just breathe it in and just be totally cool with the fact that we're breathing in poison. And like, if you live in South Tacoma, which I used to live in, and I didn't know this until I joined CAS, but apparently the your life expectancy goes down by, what is it, 8 years?
Yeah, as many as 25 years. So that the biggest gap in life expectancy between two areas in Tacoma is 25 years. But I think on average, it's closer to 8.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. Mm-hmm.
It sure is. Wow. So, you know, there's a, I belong to the IWW and.
Ow.
And expression that they have is there aren't any jobs on a dead planet. So, and what I like to think about is that even a baby bird doesn't foul its own nest. They're taught immediately, which doesn't mean it's okay to foul somebody else's nest, but let's start with that one. Yeah. So I'm really glad that you're here, Cordell. And how old are you, by the way?
Oh, I'm 25.
Yeah, I'm old and everybody seems really young to me. And one of the things I love about CAS is that there's so much young energy and they're passionate. They're so smart and they get stuff done. I am tired of being in talk groups that don't do any action. So I'm a member too. And you are listening to KTAH. I forgot to say that at the beginning of the program. 101.9 FM. Low power to the people.
Ooh.
We
ow,
are
ow.
Low powered well station. So, F.A., could you give us a briefing about Sierra Construction?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, Sierra Construction is the company that Bridge Industrial is contracting to build the warehouse. So Bridge Industrial doesn't actually build anything. They are just a development company. And like we talked about in our last episode, Sierra Construction has a history of, you know, when they've done projects like this in cities like Fredrickson or Woodinville, they tend to flood. And on their website, they have a lot of pictures and videos of construction sites that they've worked on, and oftentimes even have live streams as the construction is being built. And they used to have one for the warehouse in South Tacoma that they've been working on. And mysteriously, they've taken this live stream down. They don't want us to see what, you know, how the construction's going. And I think that's really suspicious. And so, you know, for a lot of reasons, I think they know, because we are observing and making sure that, you know, they're following construction and permitting guidelines. I think they're, you know, feeling the pressure a little bit. And, you know, I don't feel confident that they're taking as many environmental precautions as they should be and should be required to be. And so, you know, I think that's probably a big reason on why they're taking down these cameras.
Gemini?
I want to jump in on that because one of the members of CAS has family that has worked for Sierra Construction before in groups that they work with. And we talked to some of the employees there, and they are not required to wear full protective equipment, full PPE, while on the Superfund site. When the EPA goes to the Superfund site, they wear full PPE, but the workers who are there for 40 plus hours a week don't. Right? They know that if we're able to monitor what they're doing, they're going to get caught doing some nasty stuff. Mm-hmm. The employees said that they were like briefed. They had to watch a video on the hazards of the Superfund site. But in my opinion, that is clearly not enough.
So we're talking about the potential not only for human harm, from the construction people, but this is a Superfund site that's likely to flood. And where would the contaminated water go?
If you look at the geography of the area, you know, the west side of the site is South Tyler Street, which is a higher elevation. And then there's that big slope with all the trees, including like Gary Oaks. And then down that slope is usually where the seasonal wetlands forms every year. And if you continue going down that slope, you'll see there's General Plastics and Northern Fish Company and Vincent St. Paul, and then South Tacoma Way, where all of our small businesses in South Tacoma are. And that personally makes me nervous that the possible flooding could, you know, go through also like the metal recycling place. So it would take up all of this Superfund contamination. Exactly. And then go through the metal recycling and other industrial places and potentially flood the South Tacoma Business District. And there's also a lot of homes there.
So people might think that we're catastrophizing. I just invented that word. But maybe you could explain a little bit about what happens up in Frederickson.
Definitely. So like we were talking about in our last episode, again, Sierra Construction is the ones contracted to build a very similar but much smaller scale warehouse in Frederickson. Frederickson, yeah. And in that project, there's a lot of videos or footage, I guess, of floods going through people's backyards as deep as like a car is tall.
Like a healthy, well, unhealthy stream?
Right, yeah. It's like a new river forms because, you know, usually a wetlands or an aquifer is very porous. It's made out of soil structure that allows a lot of water to seep into it. And when you compact that or pave it over, the water isn't allowed to seep into the porous soil. And that, you know, forces it to just spread out along, you know, in pavement. And we always hear if it hits the ground, it hits the sound. Right. All of this rainwater is going to pick up, like you said, this Superfund sludge, and it could potentially flood neighborhood and the business district and then wash down the drain into the Puget Sound.
So from our last episode, I remember hearing that the flooding up in Frederickson is still happening every rainy season. Have they experienced any like undercutting of foundations or cars being swept away?
There's definitely serious property damage that's been caused by this water. And as we know, rates for insurance can be very complicated and difficult. And when this starts happening in your neighborhood, it's very hard to sell your home. So because the Frederickson warehouse complex isn't our main campaign, I haven't reached out to any of the people who've been impacted by this yet, but we have a ton more information about this with pictures and more details on our website at climatealliancesouthsound.org in the blog section if you want to read more about it.
Thank you. Wow. Well, now, is there anything else that you'd like to say about the mega warehouse plan in Tacoma before we move on to another subject, which I know is very timely?
The only thing I'd add is this project was proposed in, or really started picking up steam during the height and beginning of the pandemic in 2021, where they were projecting maybe they would need more warehouses, but now, in 2024, it is beyond bogus. They do not need these warehouses. We have tons and tons of unused warehouse space. You can also see maps of that on our website. Lots of vacant warehouse space. This is clearly just a cash grab and an investment opportunity. If you go to Bridge Industrial's website, like Aoife already pointed out, they're not a warehouse building company. They're just an investment company and a managing company. They don't do anything. They don't add any value except invest people's retirements, right? And this is a bad investment. It's a bad investment that's going to hurt Tacoma and it's going to hurt everybody. And so, you know, it's not too late to pull out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to go onto a subject that's been on a lot of people's minds, and that is the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And Cass got it together, and several people from Cass went up to the convention. Take it away.
Yeah. So Aoife, did you want to talk about the DNC lead up actions and what we had to do to prepare to get there? Or should I start with a summary?
I'll start with talking about how we started all of this as CAS. So the Coalition to March on the DNC basically invited us, Climate Alliance of the South Sound, to come and march with them. And we also were at the march on the Republican National Convention, which, you know, these events were closely tied and we were able to mobilize to both events, which is great. But for the DNC, well, we actually started raising money all the way back in April. We had a bake sale and this was a really successful event. We were able to use the Common Good space on a Sunday, and there just so happened to be like a pro-Palestine event there when we were having the bake sale. And so a lot of people were super supportive. And so since April, we've been sort of building up, doing different events, educational events, as well as like fundraisers. And I've just been really so appreciative and inspired by our community who supports us in so many ways, whether, you know, like, of course, people made financial donations, but more than that, people donated so much time and energy and their labor and a lot of research going into this. And so for the RNC, we were able to mobilize 4 cast members to Milwaukee. And for the DNC, we had 3 people go. And we all took roles. And actually, me and Gemini went a week early to help get things set up for the big day on, what was that, August 19th?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so Gemini?
Yeah, so the march on the DNC, well, we first started talking about it last October and started organizing around it starting April, had been in the works as part of the March on the DNC coalition for years. Basically, as soon as they knew that the DNC was going to be in Chicago, they have been organizing towards this. And so when, you know, we got involved a long time ago, but it was still after a lot of work had already been done. So it was really exciting to be part of something so big and see it go off so well. Some listeners might be familiar with a very famous march on the DNC that happened in the 60s in 1968, where the police attacked, brutalized protesters, arrested lots of people, famously the Chicago 8, which included Bobby Seale from the Panthers. He eventually got removed anyway. And what we were really hoping to do as the March on the DNC Coalition was create a family-friendly march where we were able to march within sight and sound of the DNC to hold our elected officials accountable without getting brutalized by the police, right? If the police brutalize you, that is the police's fault. But we also don't want it to happen. Right. And so some of the things that we did to prevent that were getting a march route. That's something that they didn't have in 68, and have stages, amplified sound, porta potties, all the stuff that you need to keep a lot of people safe. And when I say a lot of people, I mean a lot of people. There were 20,000 people on the first day, and that was on August 19th. And then there were several other days of activities that the March on the DNC was not the core organizer for between the 19th and the 20th. Oh, sorry, 22nd. But the second day of the march on the August 22nd, there were 11,000 people. So across all of the days, while some of those people are the same person, we're counting like more than 30,000 people in the streets. And we were successful. We were successfully able to stay safe, keep those people safe, march within sight and sound. We had a delegation that got into the chambers of the DNC and hold up a banner so that people inside could not ignore a message. And that was really successful. We heard from people inside that they were talking about us. We were very disruptive. We delayed the beginning of the meeting, and we caused serious, serious delays and conversations to happen throughout the week.
Wow. Now, obviously, you had some things that you wanted to get through to the Democratic National Convention. By the way, I met a woman who on Saturday at the picnic. She's just turned 23 that day, and she was a delegate here from Tacoma. So she was on the inside. She was very frustrated because they weren't allowed to hold any signs up, and no one was allowed to speak about Palestine. But you and I, we're many things, but Climate Alliance is about the climate. So what were your particular reasons for protesting at the Democratic Convention?
Yeah, the biggest issue on my mind is the genocide in Gaza. And obviously the Republicans are not friends of Palestine either, but the Republicans are not in power right now. It's the Democrats who are, and they are the ones who have been okaying and sending billions of dollars of aid to Israel to commit an ongoing genocide. And so the reason this ties into climate is because people are not separate from the environment. We are part of the environment. And if you kill 40,000 people in Palestine and more, that's just the number of confirmed murdered Palestinians. You kill 40,000 people, you are destroying the environment. When you carpet bomb Gaza and Palestine, that's the earth that you are carpet bombing. This is a climate issue. They have destroyed more than 40% of arable land in Gaza and other parts of Palestine. And when you have that level of destruction of the planet, you cannot pretend like this isn't an environmental issue. People who are familiar with CAS will know this figure, but think to yourself, do you know how many military bases the U.S. has around the world? Almost 800. 800 bases. This is why the U.S. military is the number one single largest greenhouse gas emitter on Earth.
That's right.
And so when we are looking at war and particularly evil genocide, you cannot separate that from the environment. And that's why CAS was mobilized to the march on the DNC. And not to mention, the DNC makes a lot of promises that they don't always follow through on. Right. And as our elected officials, we want to hold them accountable to all of the climate promises that they have made. And that's another reason.
Yeah. I'm just staggered thinking that we are being taxed so that we can buy military weapons to send to Israel to commit genocide and destroy the planet.
And it's not just the money that goes to create bombs and tanks and weapons and guns. Obviously, that is bad. But we also invest a tremendous amount of tax dollars into research. Like at the university, famously this year, there were lots of encampments for Palestine.
That's right.
And the schools refused to divest. Even when leadership in the universities said that they might begin the divestment process, the U.S. government stepped in and said that they would be fired if they did. This is how tight the military-industrial complex is tied to our education. And every dollar that goes into researching the best way to blow apart a Palestinian child is a dollar that didn't go towards fighting climate change. And that's you know, even more reason to be involved as a climate organizer.
Yeah, and it's been going on for a very, very long time.
That's right.
Yeah. So, when did you get back from the DNC?
That's right. We were in Chicago from the 9th to the 24th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we spent from the 9th to the 19th preparing. We made a bunch of banners. We made a bunch of the picket signs. We went to press conferences, spoke with countless media, went to different trainings, And we, my favorite part actually was getting to spend time with elder organizers in Chicago. We just learned so much from them, and they were so kind and welcoming. It was just awesome, especially people like Frank Chapman with the Chicago Alliance Against Political Repression and Racism. He's an author, and he's just such an awesome guy and really wise and had a lot to share.
So did you find any other new groups that you hadn't known about?
Yes. Yeah, we definitely all kinds of groups. The coalition had over 270 endorsing organizations. And so being in the streets with just so many other powerful allies in every facet of, you know, the fight for justice and activism, we actually got to know another climate justice organization who came in from Minneapolis. And so it was just awesome to meet other environmental organizers from across the country and be able to learn from their struggles and, you know, share ours and get advice. And yeah.
Well, it's not in my script here, but hey, what are some things you learned at the convention?
Ooh, quite a lot. The biggest takeaway that I had was, we need to be quantitative about how we are doing things. A lot of times, CAS and other organizations will be very qualitative, very like, well, that was fun, or that wasn't fun, or that seemed good, it didn't seem good. But we're not tracking how many people came, how many flyers did you hand out, that sort of thing. And after talking to Frank Chapman and other leaders in Chicago, when they fight for and plan stuff, they, you know, count the number of flyers, they look at the police districts, the number of people, everything they do is analytical. And I took a lot away from that in how we can affect better change in Tacoma using methods that organizers have used in other cities. I also learned about door hangers. I've never done door hangers before, but as part of build up, we put out 5,000 door hangers. And that was really cool. As for like new stuff about the genocide in Palestine or other issues, we've been going to build up calls and planning meetings for this for months and months leading up to it. So I think that I've done a lot of learning along the way. I'm not sure. I couldn't pinpoint exactly what I learned at the March on the DNC that.
You're probably still processing.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, it's like mostly the takeaways were like organizational. There also wasn't a lot of time because like Aoife was a medic. I was a media liaison and a speaker. And so basically every single second of every single day we were there, we were in like go mode. So
So how about you, Aoife? What are some things that maybe you learned while you were there?
I think one of the things that I really took away from going to the march on the DNC, well, like I said, there were so many different groups there and they all have, you know, different fights. We all have different battles and different strategies and, you know, fight for justice in different ways. And we have a lot to learn from each other. And when we act in unity, we are just so powerful, so much more so than all of us, you know, fighting separately. When we join in coalition, our collective power is just maximized to the fullest extent. And it's not easy doing that. That doesn't always mean you have unity in ideology. You know, it takes all kinds of people to maintain this organization and strength that we have together. And so I think that's one of the biggest takeaways for me is like, most importantly, when we have unity in action, we can fight and we can win.
That's right.
It's important. You know, I left the meeting last night, and when you presented the little piece about quantitative analysis, my initial response was very negative, and I won't even repeat it. But I learned something. I was negative at first because I thought, oh, there we go with the Democrats and the Republicans doing quantitative stuff so they can ask for money, you know? And so that's where my head was going.
Right.
Is that, oh yeah, we had 50,000 people, so give us money. But that wasn't it at all. It was about getting the information that you need to be more effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that, although it's not my thing, there were people at the meeting last night that's exactly what they'd love to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's a way to be more effective.
Yes. Yeah, like Cordell.
Like Cordell.
He wants to talk about the importance of analytics.
I don't know if I know much. I mean, I feel like numbers are just fun. Like, it's just like if I go running on a treadmill, like, it's just nice to be able to see like the numbers go up. And then you know, like, hey, this is my progress. This is how well I'm doing, and so on. And there's, I think it's always good to be able to just know definitively how well you're going on anything, as opposed to just vibes. Not that vibes are bad, just I like certainty of the numbers.
Yeah.
So what are some events that are coming up that you know about?
Cass is actually having a canvassing blitz and cookout coming up later this month on the 29th.
September 29th.
Yeah, Sunday, September 29th, I believe 1 to 3 p.m., we're going to have a cookout.
Yeah, so it's going to start at 1 o'clock. Like Aoife said, it's going to be a canvassing blitz and a cookout. For people who don't know what a canvassing blitz is, I promise you it's so fun. It might sound scary, but what we'll do is we'll all meet together and we'll do a big training together about how to inform people about the Mega Warehouse project. Because remember, even though the Mega Warehouse site has houses on three sides of it, people were not meaningfully informed. And we know they're not meaningfully informed because we go canvassing every week and inform them ourselves. And the number one thing I hear the most when I am knocking on people's doors about the Mega Warehouse project is, oh, I haven't heard about that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard about something that's going to poison my children and possibly ruin my house and you know, worsen wages for all of Tacoma. I could go on and on. Anyway, so come to the Canvassing Blitz. We'll teach you all of the talking points that you need and all the skills you need to be able to inform our neighbors about this project. And then we're going to break up into teams headed by a lead organizer, canvasser, who will take you into the neighborhoods and you'll knock on doors and let people know about this. Because when people know about it, they want to fight. I know a lot of some of the people who are members of CAS we met doing this, and we've definitely informed a lot of people about the Mega Warehouse, but I don't have numbers on how many people because we haven't done the quantitative analysis.
Exactly. Yeah. And we don't know how many flyers to print.
Exactly.
Now that really got to me.
Yeah, exactly. So the canvassing blitz is just the first part. That's going to go from about 1 to 3, and then we're going to have a cookout and people can stay for as long as they want. There'll be vegan and gluten-free options. We'll probably have some live music and a little bit of programming. So it should be super fun. I don't know if Aoife wants to talk about their experience with canvassing as someone who wasn't a canvasser.
You might want to give the location of where this is going to be.
Oh, that's a great point. So we're going to meet at Wapato
Hills.
Wapato Hills Park, which is on the west side of the freeway, not the side of the freeway that Winco is on, the other side. There are two Wapato parks. One of them is Wapato Park with the lake in it. Not that one. We're meeting on the other side of the freeway at Wapato Hills. The address and everything will be on our website and on our Instagram. It's not up yet, but it will be very
shortly. And that's
shortly.
From 1 to 3.
That's from 1 to 3,
and
yeah.
That's September 29th.
And that's September 29th.
And I think there's even covered area there in case the weather isn't perfect.
Mm. And we'll be bringing our own canopies.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And when we unite, we can win.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And when I'm somewhat of a new organizer. I was an activist for a long time, but I've only recently become an organizer. And when this idea of canvassing, like going door to door, knocking on people's houses and talking to them was pitched to me, I was like, that's unthinkable. You can't just talk to strangers, right? I don't know these people. But when I started doing it, I realized that these are our neighbors. We have so much in common with these folks. Like, our destinies as people who live here are intertwined as long as we live here, and we share common goals. And they are not the scary boogeymen that like CSI and all those crime shows make them out to be. And it actually really benefits Bridge Industrial and the other organizations if we believe that. If we believe that all of our neighbors are scary people, that benefits Bridge Industrial. And coming together and building community, even with people who don't agree with us on everything, which definitely happens, we can still build unity on the things that we do agree on. And that's what makes us strong.
You know what? You're giving me the urge to hop on buses and and tell people on buses in that area why they need to get involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about a captive audience. I don't know if that's fair. Well, I guess we're going to wrap up. So, Wendy, I know you're going to tell me it's on the website, but if the listener wanted to come down and see all these amazing young people that are doing such amazing things, when are the meetings and where are they?
So we meet every single Monday at 5:30. We have dinner and our planning meeting starts at 6 at the 350 Tacoma space, which is 311 Puyallup Avenue. It's kind of near the Tacoma Dome Station and Freight House Square. Dinner is delicious. We have just great cooks and cats. So come down. You can come just for a meal. Come see us. Check us out. Join our meeting. We need help. We need your ideas. We need people who want to come be on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Child care by request.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I highly recommend taking the bus, because parking is limited and parking just adds to the problem of pollution.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So I guess that's all for now. And thank you for listening to Cass Radio, which is going to get a new name at some point in time.
Yeah.
So,
Is it okay if I do a little shout out really quick?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we've had a community member who's been joining in at our Cass meetings and is part of another group called Tacoma Psychedelic Society.
Oh, thank you.
And they were hoping we could do like a little shout out. And, you know, we love collaborating as Cass. And, you know, I think all of our fights are connected in some way or another. So I'm going to read a little snippet that Des sent me. And here we go. Psychedelics and environmental activism share the principles of connection, holistic well-being, and challenging established paradigms. Psychedelics frequently produce experiences of unity with nature, instilling a strong sense of duty to protect the environment. Both organizations value community and collective action, drawing inspiration from indigenous wisdom while advocating a renewable worldview. Psychedelics can cause spiritual and ecological awakenings, leading to lifestyle changes that are in line with environmental principles such as sustainability and conscious living. These experiences can inspire people to become more involved in environmental activism as they work to protect the natural world to which they feel connected. And this is from the Tacoma Psychedelic Society. So, and it, again, it takes all kinds. Mm-hmm. We need whatever gets you out there doing activism, especially environmental activism. That's awesome.
Yes. So thank you for listening, and have a sustainable and beautiful day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.